hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Solace in the City. Today I'm so excited to be here with Liz Gunner and Laura Farrell, who are the hosts of the podcast The Real Dietitians of New York City. Thanks for being here, guys.
Hi everyone.
Hi, so let's start with Laura. Where are you from? How old are you? What's your story?
Yes, yeah, so my name's Laura, as she said. I'm 24 years old, coming up on that 25 mark pretty soon. Nice. Not excited about that, but I'm originally from upstate New York, so like Binghamton area, if anyone knows that is. Okay. A lot colder. And I did my undergraduate at Cornell University, which is where I studied nutrition, finished the program there, and then I moved to New York just about 2 years ago, and I did what's called the dietetic internship. So that's like a residency, if you can think of like how doctors do that, mm-hmm. but not as exciting and you don't get paid. And then I finished that, took my RD exam, and now I work as a dietitian in private practice, and I also work in a gym in Soho and just do like nutrition counseling.
Oh, fun. Yeah. Okay, cool. And Liz, how about you?
Yeah, so my name's Elizabeth, or Liz Gunner. And then, yeah, I went to Cornell University undergrad as well, and that's where me and Laura met because we were roommates. Like the meme. Is it a meme?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I went to Cornell University undergrad, and then I'm doing my dietetic internship, which is what Laura did as well. So I'm basically her, like, a year behind. And I'm doing that in New York City. Currently, I'm in my sports nutrition rotation. But yeah, you basically just rotate through all different aspects and like facilities of nutrition. And so I'll get my registered dietitian license in June.
Yeah. Awesome. So how did you guys both get interested in like nutrition and like a dietitian?
Yeah. So our stories are also very similar. So I was a athlete in high school. And so like I would get told by my coaches to like eat a banana for cramps. And like I ran track. So mm-hmm. we would like carb load before meets and stuff. And then I also figure skated. So like,
yeah,
it's just a lightweight sport. Yeah. And so you kind of have to like be mindful of like what you're eating, just to fuel appropriately. So that's kind of how I got interested in it. And then on top of that, my mom was a vegetarian. So mm-hmm. she was always like eating different like vegan, vegetarian meals. So I kind of got interested through her as well. And then when I got to college, in my intro bio course, my professor was like, oh my gosh, you're like really good at like the nutrition for like plants and stuff. He's like, I think you should take an intro to nutrition course. So I was like, okay. So I took an intro course, and then that professor was an RD, registered dietitian. And then my advisor at the time was also a registered dietitian. And they were like, oh, if you want to like explore this, like you can. So I worked at Strong Hospital for a while, just like volunteering, and went to different facilities, like a yoga studio too, in Rochester. So yeah, that's kind of how I got interested. And then I was like, this is going to be my career.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And this is Laura again. I'm just saying that because sometimes our voices.
Yeah, your voices do sound really similar.
But yeah, so mine's kind of similar as well. I grew up playing sports, except I played lacrosse. So like a little bit different physical demand on the body. But I also like grew up in a house where we ate like Pop-Tarts for breakfast, and like it wasn't really quote unquote healthy. Mm-hmm. But in a way, I feel like that kind of shaped me to have a better relationship with food than I see some of my clients have. And like I said, so I just got interested in it because of lacrosse. And then later on in college, I was really into like going to the gym, that kind of stuff. Learned more about like supplements, what's good, what's bad. And obviously through class, learned more about like how food is metabolized by the body. And now I kind of realize, like, since I've actually been working as a dietitian, I'm almost like less interested in the food part and more like the emotional.
Yeah, definitely.
So I am learning, and I kind of wish like I took more psychology classes because I think it would have helped me out. But now I'm really passionate about like helping people like heal their relationship with food, but also nourish their bodies in ways that, you know, help them achieve like performance and fitness goals.
I love that. So what is the difference between a registered dietitian and a nutritionist? Because I never know.
So there, it's actually a pretty big difference, but it's not really well known. So nutritionists, technically, like anyone can call themselves that. But to become a dietitian, you kind of have to go through like the process that me and Liz explained. So you need a bachelor's degree in nutrition. But when you're in your undergrad, you have to be in like a certain program. So there's only a like a certain amount of schools in each state. It's called like a DPD, like dietetics program. And all that really means, it's just like extra coursework that you have to take besides like your basic like nutrition 101 and like all the bio and chem classes. You do like food science, you do even like so many different things like nutrient metabolism. You learn about like the business side of things. And then once you complete that program, you apply to the dietetic internship. So, and that's usually 9-10 months, and you have to complete a minimum of 1200 like practice hours for free. So there's always that. And then once you complete that, you're eligible to sit for the RD exam.
Got it.
And then nutritionists, they don't have to do really any of that. And it kind of depends like state to state. So in some states, they have like what's called licensure, where if you're going around giving like meal plans or saying like, oh, I could help someone with diabetes or whatever, you can get fined and like in trouble for doing that. We don't have that in New York. So it's not really regulated. But if you're ever like in a hospital or an outpatient setting, or even like on a college campus, they're not going to hire you unless you're a dietitian.
Okay, got it. So I think it's really interesting, the relationship between food and your relationship with food and mental health, because obviously, I mean, people have eating disorders and those stem from an unhealthy relationship with food. So I was wondering if you guys had ever experienced that on your own, and if not, or if so, like how you guys managed to have a real healthy relationship with food, and even while you were so closely monitoring and thinking about it because of your work.
Do you want to go first? Okay. So yeah, definitely. And it's kind of interesting because sometimes people get into the field of nutrition in like it because they have a disordered relationship with it. Because like most people, if you're thinking that much about food, they're like, oh, I should go like study this. And sometimes it can almost like backfire because it makes you think about food even more.
Yep.
And thankfully, how I was saying, like growing up, I never like lived in a house where anyone was on a diet. Like my mom never talked to me about my weight. None of that stuff, but that's like where most things that I see with the clients that I work with now, that's where a lot of their issues stem from, is things that like how we're taught to eat as children. And like what I work with a lot of my clients is basically just unlearning a lot of like the food rules that they were taught over the years. And I think that if anyone wants to be a dietitian, you should have like a neutral relationship to food. Like I don't really view certain foods as like good or bad. It's more like some have more nutrients, but then like all foods kind of can have their place.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
And what about you, Liz?
So similar to Laura, I have a pretty similar view on food. I don't view them as like good or bad, but I think that they can nourish you in different ways. So like a salad can nourish you, or an ice cream can nourish you. It just kind of depends on like what the circumstances and what you're looking to get nourished. Like, is it going to be social like nourishment and like a mental nourishment, or is it just preference and like taste? And I don't think that any food is like good or bad per se. And I kind of got into like the realm of nutrition and labeling, I guess, foods as like good or bad in high school. So unlike Laura, like I kind of grew up thinking like that, like very black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny because it's sort of a running joke with like my friends that aren't in nutrition. They're like, the more you learn about it, like the quote unquote worst like foods that you consume kind of, but it's only because you're like Laura said, like healing your relationship with food and kind of not looking at them as black and white, because there is a big gray area.
Yeah.
And that's okay. So for me, I did have to unlearn some of those rules. And especially being an athlete, like you're told, and in figure skating, like you're told to eat this, like not that. And it's a, like I said, like a lightweight sport. So weight is a focus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, yeah, I had to unlearn that and kind of appreciate and accept myself as I am. And I think through that healing process, it's really important when you're working with clients to be able to relate to them and tell them that it's totally normal and it's okay, and you can relearn that like negative kind of pattern, that like hyper awareness of like good and bad foods.
Definitely. It's really interesting, actually. Like, I recently opened up on the podcast specifically about my own issues with food and like my own battle with an eating disorder. And so when I came to New York, like when I first moved here and everything was kind of all happening at once, I had to start seeing a dietitian. And it was like a totally new experience for me. I mean, just she was so knowledgeable and she was really helpful. But I do think there was that lack of relating
kind of. Definitely.
And I mean, I know that there are so many things in my mind like blocking me from being able to hear what she was trying to say. But in terms of like the real emotional support and getting
like that empathy factor, for sure, it plays a huge role.
So like what do you guys say to clients, and especially in New York where everyone is like
so focused,
it, like so on focused appearance. On appearance, exactly, and it's like just such a not real, you know, perception of, it's like such a unique perception of life. But how would you speak to clients and like have that empathy,
like with a client with an eating disorder,
or just an unhealthy relationship with food, of, or just thinking, you know, being too preoccupied on it?
I think different practitioners have different approaches. So like Laura's approach, for example, might be focusing on that childhood like ingrainment of good and bad foods. Or somebody might focus on kind of healing that relationship with food by what's called, what is that called with the, when you have to like eat food with them?
Oh, why can I not think of it? It's basically like meal sharing. And that's like, it's more a thing that you do with like, if people are in like active eating disorder recovery, and like, let's say they have a food that they haven't, they're like scared to introduce and like, they feel like they don't have control. Oh, meal support. I'm sorry. That's what it's called. So basically like they would come in and bring, I don't know, like a chocolate milk or something. And like you would have it with them together in kind of like a calm, controlled environment. And what it does is it kind of just helps them realize that, okay, even when you consume these foods, like nothing happens to you. And just introducing like certain fear foods in a way, but that's like, again, more active like eating disorder, where if it's just like someone with like a disordered eating, and there's a big difference between like eating disorder and disordered eating. My approach is always just having them take a step back and realizing that like the only person you can compare yourself is to you. And like, just because you see someone on the keto diet or this or that, like, and it may look like they're thriving and like feeling great and looking good, you don't know what's going on in their head and like the deprivation that they're feeling. So I just always have people like, take a step back and realize that if you choose to like hyper focus on food and obsess over those thoughts, like that's not serving you in the long run. So I always focus on like the healthy behaviors that we can add in, versus like they usually come in of like, what food should I take out?
Also like another thing is focusing on the why. So like, for example, like we talk about this a lot in intuitive eating. If you have a certain food rule or a, I guess, desire to, for example, like lose weight or get a six pack or whatever it is, focusing on why that actually is really helpful. So being able to uncover like, oh, I want this because, I don't know, I have this insecurity, or I felt like this is a way for me to connect to my mom in my childhood, or whatever it is. But uncovering that, because then you can work on that why. And instead of focusing on the food or like the aesthetic goal, you can focus on why you want that, and then healing that kind of mental aspect of those desires. Because oftentimes they aren't, it's not because you just want a six pack. It's because of a deep issue, like a rooted issue.
For sure. It's so connected to the mind. It's
definitely.
I think that's something I came to realize when I was like approaching like my own issues, was, okay, this is because of my anxiety and like a desire to control something. And just coming to terms with that made me feel a little bit better about like what it actually was and what was driving it, and not just like insecurity, but rather a need to control something where, when everything else is outside of my control.
Definitely. Yeah, that's so common too, honestly, in eating disorders and disorderly eating, is that need for control when their life feels out of control and chaotic. It's yeah. like the one thing that they can control.
Do you guys like find that specifically New York and just metropolitan cities, like mm-hmm. either the people you're working with or your clients, like I just think that we're in such a unique environment. And so people, you know, coming in, it may, like, I imagine sometimes seem like, not that they're being dramatic, but like that their problem isn't as big as like some bigger problems. So how do you guys, I don't know, like take that in and just remain to be like subjective and not. But
no, I think I know what you're kind of getting at. And it's like, one, everyone that comes to see me has like some sort of, yeah, like dramatic event going on. Everyone here is a lot more stressed than the rest of the world. They need
to be, but like, yeah.
Yeah. And it's also, but it's like, sometimes things are like out of our control. Like even today I just had like 5 clients back to back, and all of them were like complaining how they can't do something because they have an hour commute, and then they don't want to go home and cook and do yeah. this and that. And I mean, obviously it helps, like I live in New York City, so I can definitely relate to them too. But I think like the best thing to do when it looks, or when like people come in and they're kind of like, oh my god, all these things are wrong in my life, this and that, is literally just giving them like one thing to focus on a week. Mm-hmm. 'Cause sometimes people think with like fitness and nutrition that it's like black or white, that you have to be meal prepping, going to the gym 5 days a week, eating whatever, like you're all vegetables and things like that all day. And that's not what health is. Like that, again, just kind of goes back to like that control. So like everyone has to find something that works for them. And like my job as a practitioner is just seeing like evaluating like their day-to-day, their intake, and then picking like one thing to focus on for the week.
You must have to remain pretty, like when I was, for example, I was interviewing this guy who collects Subway stories, and yeah. In a way he's like, really? Subway therapy. He's so cool. But I was like, how do you not let this affect you? And the same with like being a therapist, or in your guys' cases, like a registered dietitian, how do you not let that affect you emotionally? Like, how do you separate yourself from that?
It's honestly really hard. And so this is my first year like actually working as a dietitian. So I got my certificate. It's not what it's called. What am I thinking? My registration in June. And then I like jumped right into counseling, which is actually really uncommon. Like most people go work in like a hospital or do something else, but not what I wanted to do. And I see like people break down and cry all the time. Yeah, because like we said, it's not about food. It's about other stuff. And like, I remember like the first time it happened, like in my head, I'm like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. I was like, don't show any like outward emotion. And like now I just like expect it and it's like fine. And I think this is not something I do, but it should be something I do, is that like if you work in counseling or therapy, you should have your own therapist. Yeah. And this is something that like me and Liz always talk about this. And I'm just trying to kind of find someone that like works and fits with me. So I've been like looking around for different therapists, because
it's a lot of emotional.
It's a lot to take in. And like, I need to put it out on someone else that has no idea what I'm talking about. Because yeah. even like I go home, you guys have seen me like after a long day at work, and like in the beginning, like I would come home and like just shut my door and be like, okay, I need to just relax. But if I've had a bad day, and our roommate Anna too, like she works in mental health too, like we all come home and we're like, I had this patient and like this and that. And like sometimes just talking with someone else about it helps, but I'm still learning, so I can't give you the perfect answer.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And that's how I imagine, like I'm such an empathetic person. I feel like I just start crying with them and feel like a mm-hmm. saint. So it sounds just really hard, but I commend you guys for that.
Yeah. And for that though, sometimes like this sounds weird, but like it kind of makes me feel good, because I'm like, sometimes I see people have these breakthroughs that like, I had this client, she was like, I was talking to her about like her relationship with food and how like basically telling her to like stop using a food tracker, because she was relying on like an external thing to tell her how much to eat when she should like listen to her body more. And she just like started crying, and she was like, oh, I've never like thought about it that way. I've never had anyone like tell me that. And so it can be rewarding, but yeah, it's definitely. Just like, you just have to like take a step back and realize like, even if like I've had people be angry as well, and like, yeah, know that like, it's not about you.
Definitely. So what inspired you guys to start a podcast, and what is it about?
I'll let you do that.
I'm sorry, it's tough with the two mics, but it's my first double interview, so.
Yeah, no, it's fine. And just to go back to also what we were talking about, I think the two big things as like a practitioner that has to work with somebody, are people that are pouring their emotions out to you, is to have a good support system.
Definitely.
And have people to talk to about it, whether that be like practitioners that are in your fields. Like, thankfully, Laura and I have a ton of RD friends or RDs to be friends, or Anna, which, you know, she's a different type of practitioner, but
yeah, so definitely just having a mental health advocate.
Yeah.
Shout out Anna.
Yeah. Love Anna. But yeah, so the podcast, so the Real Dietitians of New York City, it's kind of a funny way of like how we thought of it. But so Laura just got her RD, and I got these huge balloons that were like RD, and we were like taking pictures or whatever. And I was like, that caption should be the Real Dietitians of Astoria, because we live in Astoria, Queens. And then I don't know how it escalated somehow to New York City. And then I don't know, we're like, okay, it's kind of like Beverly Hills, but not. We just thought it was funny. So we're like, okay, this is like a kind of a funny name. And then Laura and I just feel like we have like good insight on nutrition and health. Not to say that like other people with podcasts don't, but there are a lot of YouTubers and Instagram people that kind of just put out what they do. Mm-hmm. Or can kind of be detrimental to people's like mental health, and in particular, like posting like pictures of their abs and saying like they do the ketogenic diet. And so I think having people that have gone through like rigorous undergraduate coursework and then a rigorous dietetic internship, and then sat for a board exam specifically in nutrition, is really helpful to the podcast world, just yeah, because
definitely.
It's like evidence-based advice.
It's honestly something I'm surprised I haven't seen something but like this before, because you know, you go on Instagram and there's like 8 billion people who have Instagram blogs, like after they, you know, suffered with it, not to put anyone down, but like after they suffered with their own relationship with food, and then it's like all cooking and power to them. But I think that you can also sometimes get caught in that trap, like if you are having a difficulty because you're just seeing like what they're eating, the quantities they're eating, what exercise they're doing, mm-hmm. all this. And then like you can just start the whole comparison game, which yeah. is never great, where you guys studied the literal effects of this. And mm-hmm. for people who can't afford going to an actual nutritionist, you guys are kind of giving them a little bit of a taste of what it, no pun intended, what it's like.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that whole aspect of not being able to afford things definitely hits home for me in particular. So both of my roommates know that I struggle with like getting insurance, like health insurance, and getting things covered, just because I've had like a weird story. My parents like left to Panama, and then they like dropped our insurance in like 2014, and then Obamacare came into play, so then we had to get insurance. So we kind of have like this loophole insurance that like nobody accepts. So, yeah, going to see a practitioner, like I get a lot of my advice through like podcasts and like mm-hmm. blogs and just research articles, stuff like that. And so, yeah, having like sound advice for things that people are going through that's free, I think is really important.
That's awesome. Sure. Yeah, that's so cool. So what are you like, because it's in its infancy, like what are you guys going to talk about, and like how do you see the episodes, and what's it going to be like?
Do you want to answer this?
Yeah. So this will probably change as like we learn and grow, but we wanted to focus kind of like the beginning stages of it, just on like me and her and like our journeys through nutrition, and kind of like explain how I was explaining to you like what a dietitian actually is.
Yeah.
And like if anyone was listening and like feel like they needed help in a certain way, like giving them that help there. And also like we want to do a couple episodes on like advice for people who are like us, so like how to become a dietitian, like what is the schooling like, because again a lot of people just don't understand. And we have like a whole, we're both very like type A.
Yeah, me too.
Which is like a very dietitian thing too. And so we have like a whole list of like episodes and things that we want to do. And kind of just like, I'm going based off of things that clients ask me a lot. So like a lot of like dispelling like fad diets. I'm really into sports nutrition and performance, so I'll probably like lead some episodes on that. Liz is into like holistic, she's loves like her skincare and like hormonal stuff and policy, she kind of does it all. So it'll be like pretty well-rounded, and I guess just depending on like what guests and things like that want to come in the future, we'll spin it whatever way.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. No, that's actually, I mean, I feel like I want to learn more about that stuff, so that's really really cool. Wait, okay, so when are your guys' birthdays?
Oh, mine is April 30th.
Okay.
95. I don't know if you knew that, but
I'm a Cancer.
Okay.
If that's what you're
so asking. You're Taurus. Okay, yeah. Cool.
And mine's July 14th, 1996.
Cool.
Hit me with those gifts on that day.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a Virgo, which in case it wasn't obvious. But what do you do for holistic nutrition? I'm interested in what that is.
Like functional medicine stuff or?
Yeah. Is it more so like taking supplements that would like regulate your hormones and things like that as opposed to actual medication?
So I'm a big proponent of food first. I actually just gave a presentation on this, but for sports nutrition, but supplement use, like do's and don'ts. And all the research really says that food should be the first source of supplementation, quote unquote.
Yeah, for sure.
But if you do find yourself in a scenario where you're like not getting enough protein, then maybe BCAAs would be a good choice. Or for athletes, like, you know, there can be protein powders that are better than others, labeling laws that are confusing. But yeah, with supplementation for hormonal stuff and like just functional medicine and like well-being in general, sometimes, yeah, you do need a supplement. Like I supplement with vitamin D just because we don't get it a lot here in New York City. And then a multivitamin can never hurt really, but you don't really need it. Probiotics can be good for some people and not so good for others. It just depends on the person. Personally, digestive enzymes work really well for me, because I have just like different gut issues, that I experience due to actually anxiety. So it's kind of funny how like the gut brain access and the gut and the brain work. That could literally be a whole episode talking about that. But yeah, there are some supplements and, foods that you can eat to kind of promote that regularity, with that's your cool. endocrine system and yeah, your hormonal regulation.
Yeah. I think something that's really interesting that I learned when I was going through my own, you know, battle per se with like food and things like that was just how much it, like how much food and what you were intaking affected your personality. Like I was so irritable and just would get angry all the time. Yeah. And like it also happened that I was at my lowest weight. And so before I could actually start taking medication, I started seeing a really great doctor. She was really adamant about like, okay, you got to get your weight up like to your base weight and then you'll see like everything come into fruition and everything will start working. So I thought that was really, really cool. And like, I never really, it's so like obvious, but I never thought about it.
Yeah, no, definitely.
That makes sense. What are like some of the coolest things? Like I'm such a nerd. Like what are the coolest things you've each found like with nutrition and what you've learned in college?
The coolest thing?
Yeah, or like thing you'd like least expect that you learned.
For me, I think it's definitely the gut microbiome and like that gut brain access I think is just so fascinating.
What is that exactly?
So basically the gut brain access is it goes through your vagus nerve from your brain to your intestine and it's just a communication pathway. So your brain might be sending what are those neurotransmitters and like different hormones and messengers to your gut. And then your gut kind of sends it back. So there's different hormones like ghrelin and leptin that kind of control hunger and cravings or gut issues. So yeah, so I think that whole aspect, and it's still being researched. It's kind of in its like baby, like infancy stages still. But there's definitely been a huge progress with gut brain research. And so, yeah, I find that really fascinating.
Yeah, that's so cool.
So for me, and this wasn't actually something I learned at all in undergrad, but when I was in my dietetic internship, I had this rotation in private practice with this dietitian who uses this principle called intuitive eating. Mm-hmm. And basically it's just like a set of 10 principles written by these dietitians like back in the 90s, but it's gaining a lot of popularity now. And all it is kind of like an anti-diet movement. So like moving away from like fad dieting and like restrictions on foods and kind of just putting like nutrition counseling in a new light. Cause sometimes people think, okay, you only go to a dietitian to like lose weight. That's not at all what's true. So it's all based on a book called Intuitive Eating. And like, kind of when I read that, my mind and everything just like opened up to a lot of like, things that like, basically that I thought me prescribing like weight loss and things that I was saying to like make people healthier, quote unquote, I was actually like being harmful. So there's a lot of like podcasts and books around that topic. So I can like send that to you if it's something that you're interested in, but basically just kind of like shifting my mindset that it's almost less about the food and more about the behaviors and mindset around it.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's funny because I feel like that phrase is thrown out or thrown around a lot, like intuitive eating, but I didn't realize it came from a book. I thought it was just like eating when you want, but I guess that is what it is.
I mean, it kind of is what it is, but there's like 10 principles to it. So
got it.
And each of them kind of like has their own, it's basically like just people are kind of exploring like their relationship with food and like throwing out their mentality around like dieting. And like how I was saying before, like listening to your body to tell you like when to eat and like when to stop when you're full and things like that, versus relying on like trackers and like weight and numbers and things that are kind of like arbitrary and change every day. Yeah, and the accuracy. Yeah. So yeah,
definitely.
Like
your body is like the most
accurate measurement.
Awesome. I usually end by asking these series of questions, but and this is kind of cool that I gotta ask both of you guys because they're unrelated to. Oh, I really need a way to transition into this because I never can get it right. But anyway, starting with you, Laura.
Yeah.
What's one thing in your life that's happened to you that's made you a stronger person today? Sorry, we're going real deep right now.
Okay. One thing that's happened to me that's made me a stronger person. So I grew up, and Liz knows this, I definitely have like some control issues. Like I always want to make sure that everything is in order. And I think that kind of just stems from like me growing up as a child, dealing with like a lot of my family's like medical history. I have like some alcohol abuse things that have happened in my family. And it's kind of just grown and like made me stronger and learn that like I can pick up and kind of move. Like when I moved to New York City, I knew like some people, but like moved in with random people I didn't know, kind of just started my life over. So knowing that, like growing up as a child, like helping my parents get through stuff just made me a stronger person as well too.
Definitely.
For me, I think it's kind of breaking the mold of the small town that I grew up in, because I was told a lot of things that if I would have listened to, I wouldn't be where I am today. So an example for that is, when I was in high school, I was a good student, but I wasn't like straight A's or anything. Mm-hmm. And I was applying to colleges and my counselor actually told me that I'm not right for college and that I should just not go to college and, just travel world for a year and figure out what I want to do, because I had came to her and I was like, I don't know what I want to do. And looking retrospectively, like I graduated with like 200 people and there was one guidance counselor. So she was probably just weeding people out that really didn't know what they wanted. It's kind of not really a waste of her time, but if people know what they want and come in to her knowing, it's so much easier. So when there's people like me that are like, I don't know what I want, you know, she would have to spend more time with me. So retrospectively, I look back and I'm like, okay, she probably didn't mean for that to be so harmful, but it hurt a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
And I had thought, you know, maybe she's right. And then when I transferred into the Ivy League University, Cornell, I think it was a good step in the right direction of just breaking that mold, that small town mold that you have to stay in the small town for the rest of your life and kind of think similarly and not be very different. So for me, I think that's definitely my biggest growing point as I get older is just being unapologetically myself and living for what I believe and what I think is right.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, at 18, no one knows what they like. No one actually knows what they want to do.
Yeah.
That's so I mean, they need to hire more counselors.
I should email them.
Yeah. Yeah, they should listen to this. Do you believe everything happens for a reason?
I do. Yeah. Definitely. I think everything in my life, I'm so, so thankful for. And even the things that I talk with Anna about this all the time, like her injury, for example. And yeah, things that you think are like the worst thing ever can actually turn out to be the best thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely.
What about you, Laura?
Yeah. So I definitely agree as well. Like everything happens for a reason. And I always think about this in terms of like my relationships. So I've been in like some real awful relationships, but and like in the time being, like it's like, okay, I feel like I had like wasted years of my life with people, but now it's like from that I learned, okay, what kind of things can I see as like red flags in people? Yeah. Or like make sure that I don't put myself in certain situations again, because if everything was all happy and amazing my whole life, then like what would I have really learned?
Yeah, definitely.
So again, just going through, and it's like I always look back and I'm like, oh, like you were able to get through that, like you can get through whatever other thing kind of comes my way.
Yeah, so. And you know what you want and don't want in a future relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
What are y'all's current relationship statuses now?
Yeah, so speaking of that, yeah, I have a boyfriend since we met like a year ago, actually. And like kind of the reason I was saying what I was saying before is like it's the first relationship I've had that's like stable and normal and not crazy. And that's kind of
rare for New York.
Oh, yeah. Like super rare. And I ran. New York is also crazy because I ran into like my terror of an ex on like the street in Soho. So I was like, OK, like still can't get away. But
everything is happening. Yeah. I ran into my ex like with my current boyfriend. It was like the best thing ever. I was like,
I know. I'm
loving this
alone
so much.
And I almost like fell down the subway after because I was like so shocked.
It was so surreal. I was like, oh, hi, this is my boyfriend, Jack. And I was like, fuck yes.
Oh, my
like,
God.
I had to like hold it like really low key. And then like my boyfriend had no idea what was happening. And then later that day, I was like, went to my therapist. I was like, guess what? But it was awesome.
How about you, Liz? So I'm currently single. I've been
slide
single.
Slide into the DMs.
Yes.
Actually, don't. Yeah.
But yes, I'm currently single, and I think I've been single for like a year and a half now or something. And yeah, my last boyfriend, we broke up on pretty mutual terms, and yeah, it's just kind of neutral with that. So
that's cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, then back to my deep questions. If a crystal ball could tell you anything about yourself, your life, the future, or anything else, what would you most want to know?
Do you know?
I would not want it to know anything, honestly, because like I said, with like, I have like control issues and I'm trying to like let go of that.
Yeah. Knowing that it would be like so
yeah,
much anxiety.
Knowing that I'm like, I don't know. And then I would just be like, it would really be hard for me to focus on like my present. And I already struggle with that, like being like happy and present. So knowing anything else about the future is definitely not something that I need or want.
Agree.
So I'm tempted to say... I am tempted to say seeing the future and seeing if I like am successful in all the things that I want to be successful in. But one of my mantras is enjoy the journey. So I think that, and I hear this from so many successful people that I talk to, is like looking when they look back, they wish that they would have really like taken it day by day and enjoyed the journey of getting to that point. So I would want to see, but I think I wouldn't because yeah. I want to enjoy my journey too. So
that was literally my next question was, do you have a mantra you live by or a favorite quote? So is yours?
Yeah, I put up mantras in our apartment like weekly, but yeah, that's one
too.
Of them. That's one of them.
It has to be shorter because I have to put the letters.
Yeah, sometimes my mantra can be too long for our board because we have like this letter
board.
Oh,
the like light
and you
up
have
one?
To, it's like individual letters. And so Laura will be like, too long, next.
But what's like your go-to?
I don't know. I have so many.
The one we have in our house right now is just enjoy today, which I like just going and like seeing that right when I like wake up every morning because it's just a reminder that like, and this is kind of sad and deep, but like you literally don't know what could happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
When I was like thinking about this so much when Kobe Bryant died, like I was like, damn, like even people like that who seem untouchable, like your tomorrow is never promised. So. Enjoy
yeah.
today.
There was this crazy quote I saw. I will need to find it, like about when that happened, because it was like, I feel like such a, like a moment that just shook everything because it really put everything into perspective. Mm-hmm. It was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. So I don't know. I have so many mantras, but
you do.
I'm just going to say enjoy the journey is going to be my go to. Yeah.
I love it. What do you love most about yourself?
I think I like most or love most about myself, my ability to empathize and my drive to make a big impact on the world. Yeah.
For me, definitely my generosity. So like whenever anyone needs anything, I have no problem like lending out things or whatever, like being there for people. And that's not even just in terms of like giving money. But like whatever, giving
your time,
time
too, yeah.
Or like driving somewhere if, I mean, I don't have a car now, but like if I did, if someone needed me, like going to whatever, a different city or something.
Yeah, no, that's great. Those are both, and I feel like those are both really great qualities. in what you're doing. Like,
yeah, definitely.
RDs. And last but not least, how do you find solace in the city?
Mm-hmm. You want to go first?
If you don't have yours, I gotta think. So I think I find solace in the city through my support system. And I am super grateful to have a really good support system. Like, not only Laura do I have as like a super close friend, but Anna. And then we have like four other friends that all are just super honest and authentic and will show up for you whenever you need it. So I think that having that support system really helps me. And I know that if I needed anything, I could ask one of my close friends. So, yeah, I'm really grateful for that.
Especially in a crazy city like New York. You need people to keep you grounded.
Definitely. Agreed.
And, yeah, similar to Liz, too, definitely just surrounding myself with people that, like, I know I can trust. So, like, my roommates, like I said before, I was living with strangers. And, like, the amount of stress and, like, loneliness I felt versus, like, when I live with Liz and Anna is just completely different. And then also, like, for my boyfriend, too, it just, like, removes me from like the stress of my work, and that's really important.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for being here. This was so great. This is my first double interview. Yay.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Where can all my listeners follow you guys, listen to your podcast? It'll probably be on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and if it's through Anchor, plug Anchor, because
yeah. So my Instagram is at Nutrition with Laura,
and then I have two Instagrams.
Plug them both.
One of them is private. So my nutrition Instagram is at Whole Liz, LIZ, Whole Liz, tick, underscore health. And then my just normal everyday Instagram is Elizabeth Gunner.
Cool. And then your podcast is?
Our podcast is The Real Dietitians of New York City.
Cool.
Yeah.
On Instagram?
Oh, yes. On Instagram it's that as well. Yeah. So.
Sweet.
Keeping everything the same or trying to.
Well, awesome. I can't wait to listen, and you guys should all listen too when you're done with this episode and check it out.
Definitely.
Okay. Bye everyone.
Bye.
Hey guys, welcome to my third solo. To be honest, at this point, I've just really liked having these solos to speak my own thoughts into existence. And if these aren't your cup of tea, you can just stop listening. But I find it really therapeutic, so I just thought I would speak my thoughts. Specifically, I mean, I recorded that episode with Liz and Laura like a couple of months ago, maybe like a while back. We're still social distancing. But, you know, with now with the coronavirus and COVID taking over everyone's lives, I thought, I don't know, there's a whole lot that can be added that we didn't talk about because we didn't know there was going to be a pandemic in a month. And it's something I've been thinking about. And then Eleni actually forwarded me this article from BuzzFeed News that I'll reference a couple of times. But basically, what I've been thinking about and what this article talks about is how devastating and like almost this coronavirus outbreak has kind of been like a nightmare for people with eating disorders or with unhealthy relationships with food for a number of reasons. And I just thought I would bring attention to it because it's not something that's publicized in the media. Rather, what's being spread in the media and talked about is pretty triggering to people who do have that unhealthy relationship. So, for example, a lot of what I've experienced, and I think a lot of people who do have that unhealthy relationship with food, it occupies our minds way too much, just food in general. And so when there's, you know, constant things on the news about like restaurants closing and stocking up on all this food and all of that stuff, like that's a lot to be put onto our minds when we don't have anything else to think about. So, you know, like isolation is the devil's best friend, or idleness is the devil's best friend, whatever that quote is, that's like very hits home for me, because when there's nothing else to think about, and you're just being shown pictures of empty like supermarkets and told to stock up on your pastas and things like that, it's like a lot to carry. And also, you know, as I've talked about in this episode and my one with Ramsey, like my own eating disorder stems from my anxiety and my will, like my need to control something when things in my life are so out of my control. And if there's ever a time that I felt out of control, it's right now when there's literally nothing we can do except just stay sedentary. So it has been hard, or it has been hard. And luckily I don't think it's been as hard as it would have been a couple of months ago. So I'm very, very grateful for that. But for anyone else who's, you know, having a rough time right now, I'd recommend just like staying away from like the news. And also just, there's a lot of people who've been, I mean, the number of at-home workouts I've seen on my Instagram feed is just like annoying. So that's another thing that can be kind of triggering. And I would just, if anyone wants to talk about that or has been feeling similar, please reach out to me, because not that I have all the answers. I mean, I'm still, you know, going through my own shit, but I think it's helpful to talk about something that's not really talked about as much as it should be. Okay, on a completely other note, I just finished this incredible book by Chanel Miller called Know My Name. And basically, she's the woman who was assaulted by Brock Turner in the Stanford rape case back in like 2015. And it is the most incredible book. Like, she's an unbelievable writer, so smart, just such a beautiful person. If that book would be triggering to you, I would not recommend reading it. But if you just want to read a beautifully written book that's really powerful, definitely, definitely, definitely recommend. And there's actually there's a line in it that, I mean, it wasn't written in to be in line with the outbreak of a virus, but I thought it was really beautiful, and I'm going to quote it. It says, quote, "Allow that you are at this moment not in the wrong place in your life. Consider the possibility that there have been no errors in the game. Just consider it. Consider that there is not an error, and everything that's come down on your plate is the way it is, and here we are. I don't believe that this was our fate, but I do believe that here we are is all we have," end quote. So, I mean, this can be, I think, applied to a lot of things. And whether it be just like a challenge you're going through in your life personally, or whether it be about this pandemic, like, I think that whole notion of just here we are is like, okay, what are we going to do with it? And it kind of touches on my point of that question I ask at the end of every episode, like, do you believe everything happens for a reason? And I've been thinking about that a lot recently because of the coronavirus outbreak. And not to like trivialize anyone who's, you know, personally suffered from COVID or is, you know, tested positive or anything like that, but in a way, I feel like this whole, I think like our country and our world needed something like this. Again, not to trivialize like the fact that it's dangerous and it's bad, but I don't know. I feel like there's just so much divisiveness in our world and our politics and, you know, just so just happening. And there needed to be something that just brought out the best in people and caused everyone to take a breath, slow down, be with their families, and just share love. It sounds cheesy when I say that out loud now, but I mean, if you think about this virus, like it doesn't discriminate against like race, gender, religion, country of origin. Like, it doesn't discriminate against everyone, anything. Anyone can get it. And just, I think our responses really show who we are as people. And I've seen a lot of beautiful things coming out of it. So again, and not to say that I want to be quarantined in my tiny apartment for long, but I do think that if you look at it from a different angle, it is bringing people together, and that's beautiful. So yeah, that's all I have to say. Stay safe, everyone. Stay inside, and talk to you later. Bye.